This is the second Sunday in a row where the gospel story is about Jesus calling the disciples. Last week, that calling happened as Jesus fell into conversation with them. And I found myself thinking about how when we say hello to someone, a calling might happen in us. In this calling of the disciples story, where I hope to get to is how each of ourselves might apply this being called language to our lives. Beginning from these disciples, what can we know about them? We can pick up little pieces from all over the Gospels about their views, and maybe they were a diverse group in their thinking. But I have to say that I imagine all of them as 20-somethings. It's probably because I imagine Jesus as that, well, maybe late 20s. And we're told that people tend to be drawn to people that are similar to themselves, so I picture them as in the age Jesus might be. But I have to acknowledge that I'm using my imagination there. We have no indication about that. In my experience, 20-somethings, or at least some of them, are not yet on their path of what their life is going to be. Some of them are, some of them know. I remember a young woman in my first year of university, and she knew she was going to be a teacher, and she never moved from that. I really envied her. In your 20s, probably you're not yet locked in by such things as career path or mortgage or marriage or children. Some people start earlier than others. But maybe you're more free than in some other decade of your life when you have lots of commitments that hold you in what you've already chosen. Maybe you're more free to drop everything and change your life, which it appears is what those young men did when Jesus called them away from their boats. Now, I haven't been in my 20s for a while, but from what I remember and from what I observe about calling language, I want to tell you about my experience of how that language was used, is used, in a church context. But then I want to move to how we might talk about call language in every facet of our lives. So in my experience, in my 20s, I was pretty restless. I didn't really have a sense of direction like that friend who was going to become a teacher. And everything I tried, I found I was disappointed and distracted because I was doing those things because I thought they were the things I should be doing. And I remember at age 25 thinking, is this all it's going to be for the next 40 years? Now, just a little background about that was, I did a history degree, and probably like many people who do a history degree and don't end up as a history professor, I got a job at an insurance company. It was really boring. And I thought it might be more exciting if I switched to some other part of financial services, and I got a job at a brokerage firm. Well, I guess it depends on which job you get, because it was worse. And as I looked around, the people who seemed to be getting ahead in that brokerage firm had business degrees, and I thought, well, maybe I should have one of those. And so I went to MBA school. And I wasn't excited by that either. What did excite me in that feeling of a boring life was that I started going to a church on Sundays. And it was interesting and stimulating. And at one point, the priest who saw that I was new, said, "How would you like to look at a book about that introduces the Anglican Church?" So he gave me this book, and it covered various facets of our church tradition. And when it got to social justice, it talked about how Anglican representatives were going to the annual shareholders meetings of companies that did business in South Africa during apartheid. And I was working in financial services. I thought, wow, that's a great thing. That's more exciting than what I'm doing. And I was that much more interested in church compared to the rest of my life. Church was exciting. So I talked to the priest about that, and he said, "So you want to be a priest?" And I was horrified at that word. And then he said, "So have you talked to a bishop?" "No." "Have you applied to seminary?" "No." It was just very confusing what this process would be. And it turned out that the process was interviews and eventually an assessment weekend, at which they wanted to know particular things about me. Specifically, why would I want to do this? Why do you think God is calling you? And I think they were looking to avoid that God spoke in my ear language as delusional. They wanted to make sure that it wasn't for the wrong reasons. So, you know, the things like, you're not going to be an abuser. You're not in it for power or respectability. It's not about the trappings or the title. It's not about your ego. And that's the negatives. The positive would be, do you have a passion and vision for what lived out faith looks like in community? So it was a committee, a series of interviews, written submissions, placements, and as I discovered afterwards, it was incremental commitment, because once you go through these interviews and you pass, and then they send you off to the middle of nowhere for your first job, it's hardly like you're going to back out of it. The result of that process was some people did drop out. And as I remember them, some of them would have been wonderful priests. And some people got through and they should have never been ordained. And we can't hide from or deny the scandals of the church that have happened because of that. But I would say, out of my experience, that both for myself and for students I have had in placements and students that I've sponsored, that mostly the process that leads to ordination is careful and intentional, and it has not lost the language of faith. How is God calling you to live your life? Has been a steady question in that whole process. And if I could articulate what it really comes down to for me, it's you feel drawn to something, and it's something that gives you joy, and you're prepared to be tenacious in hard times, and you want to be a blessing to others. So our church uses the word vocation for all of that. And it's really this language of Jesus and the disciples, that you are called by God. But I've been wondering about vocation. I think it's really a word that applies or can apply to everyone. It's not a church word. It seems natural to move from 20-something-year-old disciples to the 20-year-olds of today. But I like the idea that everybody has a vocation. That you can use the word for any career path. Faith or God might not be named, but everything that I just described about that process also applies to other career paths, even though God is not named. If you had a career where you look around at how other people are, the best qualities of people in your field, aren't they like this? That they've avoided delusional thinking? They haven't been focused on ego or power or trappings? That they have a vision and a passion for what they're trying to accomplish? That they're a joy to work with? But I've come to appreciate some other things, such as not every career is a calling. Some jobs are drudgery. Some people are working at jobs that have no joy in them, and they do it to afford to live, and they have no other redeeming quality. Now, that can be reflected in a person's life as having less joy. Or some people have a parallel life that is, they try to have as exciting and interesting to make up for that lack of something in their work. In spite of boring jobs that people have to do, you can bring something positive to how you are with people. Some people have a parallel life as a volunteer, and you live out your calling in your volunteer work. But I think I want to take it even further. What if being called by God is not about the job? Could it be more basic? What if your calling is to be you? How you go about being you is how God calls you. Now, maybe you have not lived that way so far. Maybe you've missed or lost some of those opportunities along the way. Maybe you screwed up and there are consequences. But if your calling is to be you, it's never too late. You can still live your life as a recognition that God is calling you. That would mean the calling is not the career, the calling is not the job, the calling is not the volunteer role. The calling is everything. God is asking you to be you. It makes sense that God would be calling us at every stage in our life and in all kinds of circumstances. And it doesn't even matter how old Jesus' disciples were. It doesn't even matter if we don't know how old they were. The calling is because they are who they are. They said yes to the unknown. They didn't know what they were getting into, and you can tell that by their questions. They continued to make mistakes, and they were transformed by their journey of trying to be faithful. Now, we could look at some big name examples to talk about calling. We just passed Martin Luther King Day, and I was reading about how he knew very well they would be after his life. And yet he continued to speak. And as we come to February as Black History Month, I'm thinking of another one. That song by Billie Holiday, Strange Fruit, about the lynchings in the United States. How she would end her concerts with that song, and it would be like this mic drop experience of people not knowing whether to clap. And she kept on ending her concerts with that song, even though she knew she was opposed, and ultimately she was arrested on a trumped-up charge of narcotics. Or to go with current events, what about Jacinda Ardern? That her calling is to resign at this time and be the mother she wants to be. This week begins what we call the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity. And it came about, there were actually people advocating it for it from the 1820s, but the actual Week of Prayer for Christian Unity began in 1908 when a Franciscan monk, Paul Watson, wrote about it, and everyone thought, that's a great idea. So when Paul writes about baptized into someone else's name, we're not baptized into being Anglican or Methodist or Orthodox. What Paul's saying, and what Paul Watson was saying, is we're baptized to be together. That's calling language. But the problem with big name examples is kind of like the problem with using them on All Saints Day. We tend to think of the big name people and not the ordinary saints, and the calling of big name people rather than the calling of you and me. Being called by Jesus to leave their nets, that's the disciples. Being called to be you, that's God calling us. It's for everyone. God asks you to be you. And if you have any kind of longing in your heart, that longing originates in God's love for you. God calls you to be you. And your response is the way you are blessing people today. Amen.